Patrick, give out that website again, just in case people don't remember.
Yeah, no, it's nationalpopularvote.com. And, you know, get engaged. Tell them if you want one, tell them you want one. If you don't want one, tell them you don't want one. But this is not going away.
Right.
We think every voter in every state should be relevant in the next presidential election, and we're hopeful that can occur.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
Patrick Rosensteel, senior consultant to National Popular Vote, Inc. We've been discussing this innovative effort to end the stranglehold of the Electoral College. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kolhatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band, Gets Up. Like us on facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
Next on The Struggle with Alyssa, organizer Lamar Haynes talks about CIS-focused feminism.
We're seeking someone with a proven track record in writing successful, complex proposals for diverse sources of grant funding. Previous experience working in the philanthropic landscape of the Portland metro area is preferred, and previous experiences working with community media organizations and with communities of color are A+. This is a 1-year contract position for a total of 200 hours at $25 an hour, and the grant writer will work closely with the KBOO development director. For more information, go to our website at kboo.fm and click on the KBOO is hiring link on the right side of the home page.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Feminism to get us started, I think that would be a good opener.
Yeah, well, the problem with cis-centered feminism is that it's inherently exclusionary. It excludes women who are not comfortable with the gender assignment they are bestowed upon them at birth. And we know that if we're pursuing a society that is ran and operated by workers, we need to be as inclusionary as possible in order to undo the white feminism. It's exclusionary. Well, I don't want it.
Thank you.
I don't want it. I think if you're truly somebody who wants to see people liberated, that you're willing to take a look at the ways in which you're benefiting from other people's oppression, and you're willing to challenge that. If you're not, then you're not about liberation, so you should probably stop saying you are.
So you brought up exclusionary feminism, and there is a term that is controversial. TERFs.
TERFs and SWERFs.
Which refers to trans exclusionary radical feminism and sex work exclusionary radical feminism. And they're often used together. And it's because of the legacy that is still pervasive and we're suffering from today, where many feminists see themselves as gatekeepers of womanhood, really, and respectability, and who is allowed to call themselves a feminist.
Allowed to call themselves a woman.
And who's allowed to call themselves a woman, right. So I just want to bring that out and talk a little bit about where that logic takes us, and it takes us to a smaller movement that can't possibly be as powerful as it could be.
Yeah, I mean, it takes us to not only a smaller movement, but a movement that I don't think a lot of people understand the need for us to be together in numbers. Like, you cannot get anywhere if there's just a small group of you that are struggling or jockeying for any kind of justice, because one, there's power in numbers, and two, when you're including other people, it opens up your ability to analyze and understand the struggle, like, that is brought about by capitalism in such a way that is profound, that if you're excluding other people, your understanding is microscopic. And I don't know, I feel like if you want to actually challenge systems properly, you have to know as much as possible, and to be able to challenge on all fronts. And I mean, if you can't do that, then late stage capitalism is all we're going to know. And I personally don't want that.
How do you categorize late stage capitalism in this vein? I'm asking because there are a lot of memes online, and there's a lot of discourse that goes around about some of the sort of dystopian possibilities.
Sometimes I hate the internet.
That late stage capitalism will bring us. And a lot of that rhetoric exists only on the internet. But a dystopian future is sort of within our own imagination of where we are right now. What about trans exclusionary radical feminism and intolerance of trans women, period?
I don't even think I want tolerance of trans women. I just want acceptance. I think tolerance is like very much like you can exist but don't touch me. And I don't think that's efficient. I think that we need to exist in like vibrant community.
Vibrant community.
And by that I mean a community in which we're obviously engaging in discourse, and you are listening and hearing and pushing people past the boundaries that they have, the limitations that they have. And I think late stage capitalism, I guess as it applies to this, is just one limitation after the next. And in those limitations, we see more people being exploited, greater levels of violence, greater, not just against like people's bodies, but against the actual environment. And the people who are like receiving the brunt of that exploitation and seeing their environment fall apart literally are people who are the most vulnerable, people who live in the third world, people who are people who are identifying as women, who are trans. Just like that level of violence is unsustainable. And I think that's obviously, you know, that's pretty obvious. The planet is falling apart. Granted, Earth will be fine after we're gone, I'm sure. She'll know what to do, but I want to be here for a little bit longer.
So thank you for bringing up vibrant community. It makes me think of feminist scholar, icon, Audre Lorde, right?
An icon, yeah.
Everyone, praise the Lord, okay? She talks about the power of difference,
mm-hmm.
as it related to white feminism and bourgeois feminism. When she was writing and contributing to the movement, and when she's talking about that, she's calling on her comrades in the women's movement in the 60s and 70s and even 80s, and then in the 90s when she passed away. And she's calling on them to understand that black women, and she's a black woman, she's from Curaçao and raised in Harlem and did most of her political work in New York City. She is saying how we experience patriarchy is different.
Yes.
She says to her white women comrades, you are afraid, and this is a rough quote here, but she says, you are afraid that one day your sons will grow up and join the patriarchy against you. We're worried, black mothers, that our sons will be gunned down by the police. And if we don't treat that like all of our problems, regardless of whether or not your sons, if you even have sons, if you even have children, if you don't see this as a feminist issue that has to be taken up by the women's movement, well, then we're kind of like twiddling our fingers here. And
you're striving for two different things.
I see that as reflected in some of the trans exclusion today.
I'm nodding my head. This is obviously, you cannot see that.
So not just trans women, but women who are receiving the brunt of patriarchal exploitation the world over, who experience higher levels of violence because of being sex workers or homeless women, mm-hmm. Being in the third world and receiving the brunt of imperialist dominance. Mm-hmm. And again, trans women whose gender is constantly a source of questioning, of threat, of violence just for existing. And that's, of course, all pointing to black women who, even though Audre Lorde was making these sort of appeals, her vision has not been taken up by any popular feminist movement. And it's our hope with the International Women's Strike that we can even begin to unravel and dismantle that. Lamara, I want you to speak a little bit about some of the limitations that you've experienced in the movement around the question of building a feminist vision that has kept you from participating because it's just not appropriate.
I used to be a little bit more involved in like community organizing and activism here in Portland, but over time it just became a little bit too taxing. I am obviously, like, I care about this type of stuff, but I don't really always feel that there's like a place for a black woman who is queer and has a fair amount of like mental health issues to actually be able to like be heard or seen or taken seriously enough. So that's, you know, that's something I see as kind of an issue. And I think it kind of happens when people feel like they know enough. Mm. Like, oh, I've read Audre Lorde, or I've, you know, listened to a lot of bell hooks, and I took XYZ class, so I'm done learning.
Guilty. And
yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of it too. Yeah. But the thing is, I can admit that, and a lot of people cannot.
True.
But the learning never stops, I think, is something that is pretty important. It never stops. The way in which like capitalism like changes its face in order to be able to oppress people and violate them constantly is changing. Mm. Therefore, we constantly have to be abreast, and therefore we constantly have to be reading, analyzing, and speaking to people whose experiences are different than ours. Because without that, we can't have that vibrant community. And without that vibrant community, we cannot actually have a solid challenge to capitalism.
So I'm going to ask you a really obvious question.
Oh, please do.
That you're going to roll your eyes at.
Okay.
But I want to appeal to as many normies as possible, people who are not woke or even call themselves woke.
Okay.
But you say capitalism is changing, and I just want to know, when you say that, how do you think it's changing, and what does that have to do with women's liberation and a vibrant women's movement of which you speak.
Capitalism has a lot to do with women's liberation. I think for me personally, I think capitalism is a root of a lot of the isms that we face in society today, racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia. I mean, those are not isms, but I think you can follow what that means. It's the root of that, right? Because we're divided as people who are constantly trying to figure out how to sell our labor in order to just make ends meet. And with that stress, when you, an individual, can figure out a way for yourself to feel better than somebody else, you often will take it because that seems fulfilling, because the world is like on your neck. Because you have to figure out how you're going to eat or pay your bills or do that stuff. And I think lately capitalism has been kind of throwing people these scraps that make them feel like, oh, well, you know, capitalism isn't that bad. We just have to have some like welfare measures put in place. But I think it's really important to remember that there's no welfare measures within a system that says that the only value you have is what you can produce. There's no wellness in that. But people become appeased, right? Like,
revenge is your paper.
Yeah. And I mean, as much as I love Beyonce and stuff like that and music and whatever, but the idea that as a black person, if I just get enough money, that's the best revenge, that's how I'm going to like live my best life, is completely inaccurate, because even with all that money, I'm still going to face racist oppression, and I'm still going to see other people around me facing that racist oppression because they don't have the same amount of capital as I do. So it's a limited concept in my, you know, in my opinion, in my understanding. So when people are getting those messages, oh, the best revenge you can have is like making money,
Or being an executive,
but that's not enough. Right. And we have to realize that, because the more of us that we see in office, there have not been substantial shifts within like the way that the society is functioning, at least, you know, in the U.S., whatever, right? North Carolina, voting fraud, for instance, the fact that the Voting Rights Act is constantly being like repealed, and like, you know, push further back, like that to me, yeah, it's being unraveled. Thank you. That shows to me that where we are right now isn't enough. And I don't know. I mean, I know how we got here, because I can like look at history and say, okay, well, this is what we've got. We saw a lot of our leaders be killed, assassinated, murdered, whatever. And that definitely, I think, has definitely dampened people's ability to see hope in any kind of future outside of capitalism. And because of that, I think we've been beat pretty far back. We as in the left, people who are seeing that capitalism isn't a viable option and want a society in which there is greater amounts of equity. I think there's been a lot of discouragement that has happened. And in that discouragement, the powers that be have definitely built themselves up more and been able to change their face. Like, oh, well, you know, you're going to get these like affirmative action things, right? Which has been great for white women. Affirmative action hasn't really, you know, helped that many people who are not white women. White women are the biggest beneficiaries of the impacts of affirmative action, but instead of like reaching out and bringing other people on, white women now strive to be like white men, if that makes sense. Actually, it does. I don't know why I said that. It makes complete sense, right? Because we see, I mean, even in Portland's own city commissioners, right, we see that we have two white women who are on that council. And these two women, while they are women, right, we should feel some kind of like solidarity in that.
And defend them from sexist attacks.
They are not intersectional enough and intentional enough in a way that they actually include immigrant, refugee, Black, trans, mm-hmm. Latinx women. They don't like. There's limitations to what you can do if you're just striving to become the next person in power, the next oppressor. Like that just isn't. It's not enough. Your paper can only take you so far.
And others.
Yeah, and there's other people to be considered. Yeah. I mean, I thought, yeah, that's very obvious to me, but like there's other people to be considered. Yes. Like, I'm sorry, if I have $1 million and like I'm seeing that trans women, specifically Black trans women, are being murdered at such like a high clip, my money isn't gonna do anything. Like, it's not. Yeah, I guess I can donate or do this, but it's not substantial enough to actually get to the root of the problem. Yes. And get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, having money is nice, but it can't be the best revenge.
We imagine it's nice.
We don't have any money. So
we're guessing.
I would assume that it helps in certain situations.
So one other ism that you pointed to in terms of the what capitalism gives us, colonialism.
Oh,
which
God.
Often gets lost in current conversations around things like Medicare for All and a Green New Deal, which are great starts, but if that's where you start and end, the problem is waiting in the bushes to jump back out and destroy your life. So I just want to bring that up. The United States is a settler colonial regime. It is a dictatorship of imperialism. Until indigenous people who were here before and in spite of the United States of America, quote unquote, started, until we go back and repair that, until the people who were brought here en masse, stolen
against their will,
against their will, tortured in bondage for hundreds of years, until that there's even an attempt at reparation there, where we're kind of beating around the bush here, and the empire has only grown as they do, and the arm of the United States has reached every part of the world. So I'm thinking about women right now in Haiti, women right now in Venezuela, of course, women in Palestine.
Women in Afghanistan, women like just anywhere that the U.S. empire has been, women are just being treated terribly.
Because of that original sin, the root of the problem, now we've got problems all over the world because many of our best comrades, God bless them, have not challenged the order of this settler colonial regime itself, that identify it as valid. And I think it's important that whenever we can, to say this is an empire. It's a settler colonial regime. And while sure, I'm happy to sign a petition, make phone calls, go to rallies for Medicare for All or a Green New Deal as these things develop more, people should know that if we're doing this kind of work correctly, we're going to be honest and say, no, this is not it. And that women all across the world, and indeed even women here, who are African and indigenous, deserve better than social democratic reforms.
They deserve their land back and they deserve reparations. I mean, it's pretty simple to me. And it's funny that we're talking about this because I just, I went on this date and it went terribly and I ended up leaving and kind of storming off because the person I was out with, who is a white man, was talking about reparations and how Democratic candidate, potential presidential nominee, whatever, Kamala Harris. She was asked about reparations by somebody, I guess, in some interview. And in short, she said that she was for it. And then this man turns to me and is like, well, how is that even going to happen? And then he's, you know, hits me with that line, like, because I live in Portland and it's so liberal, I try to listen to conservative news perspectives.
I've never heard that, actually.
You've never heard that?
I've never heard
that. Oh, my gosh. I hear it all the time.
No.
From, like, the places I've worked to just, like, and it's usually, like, a white dude or a white woman that says it. I don't know. The closer you are to, like, feeling like you can, like, get the shine off of capitalism, the more delusional you tend to be, I think. Anyway.
Wow, that is like a mic drop moment. Please don't drop the mic. But wow. Okay.
So I, you know, kind of tilted my head and was like, why are you worried about the how right now? Because this actually isn't a conversation that is happening in the mainstream for us to even be worrying about, like, the details of how this would happen. And the fact that you think that people who have been oppressed, people who have built this country, need to actually have, like, you know, a 12-point plan about how they're going to, like, get compensated for what their ancestors, you know, did, I think that's ridiculous. Like, you're not even acknowledging the fact, like, how violent, like, enslavement was. And I think that's a thing. I don't think a lot of people understand, like, the actual intense violence of slavery. I really don't think they do. I think they're like, oh, you know, well, you know, they got hurt. And
always say bondage and torture.
Yeah.
It's very important.
It's bondage and torture. It's mm-hmm. That's what it is. And that, to me, was, like, a moment in which I realized, oh, this person, while they say they're liberal, whatever, liberals are just kind of taxing. But
the prevailing ideology of the bourgeoisie.
Yeah, that being liberal has all these limitations because you're not even willing to, like, analyze the fact that this country was built on genocide and enslavement.
Sticks and stones.
And that now, because those things are so far away and you can't actually figure out who exactly was enslaved and who exactly lost their land when or who exactly is going to pay for it because your ancestors didn't do anything wrong. Like, he, like, looked at me and was like, well, are you experiencing, like, that right now? And I was like, that is in what, slavery? And he's like, yeah. I was like, no, I'm not, but I have generational trauma because of it. And obviously, generational trauma is becoming, like, trauma in general and how it impacts not just, like, a mother and child or, like, a father and child, like, those nuclear family bonds is something that's being researched a lot by scientists right now. And they're realizing, like, oh, no, it's not just, like, the baby being carried in the mother's womb. It's the mother that was carried in the grandmother's womb and the grandmother that was carried in her womb. Like, and all of that is, like, compounded, right? So there's, like, really no way, one, to put any kind of monetary value that's, like, enough on, like, the violence that Indigenous people and Black people, African people, have faced. And I think that's really difficult for people when they are like, well, the problem is just so big, how are we going to fix it? And since we don't have the how, then we can't do anything about it. And that's inaccurate. Just because the problem is large doesn't mean that there's no way that we can fix it.
Or understand it.
And, you know, again, he was like, well, you know, I don't really think capitalism is, like, the worst thing ever. And I was like, well, yeah, you're a white man.
You might think that.
I was like, but the way in which you and I experience, like, the brunt of capitalism is quite different. One, I'm an immigrant to this country. I moved here as a child. I mean, I didn't have a say in it, but whatever.
From Kingston, Jamaica.
Yeah, so I have, like, a strong, like, history of, like, being able to understand, like, colonization in a way I think that folks who live in the U.S. sometimes are not able to, because they don't have, like, they can't see, like, the continuation of it in the same way, because the histories of, obviously, Jamaica and the United States are different. But let's just say that, you know, white people came along and kind of messed things up for the Indigenous populations in both places, and then brought in, like, you know, a new workforce that they could further exploit. So they are similar in that way. The way in which it actually played out is different. So in order for modern capitalism to exist the way that it does right now, like, the exploitation of the bondage and inherent, like, violence upon African bodies was a key part of it, and also was in removing Indigenous people from their land. So those two things inherently really, really, really have to be addressed in order for us to think of a society that is outside of how it exists today. And secondly, the people within those groups of people, Indigenous folks and Africans, women experience a lot of that violence, right? Women of African ancestry, that's my lived experience, and that's the history I can relate most to and under and like explain most about. But our bodies were exploited not only physically but also sexually. And within the hierarchy of enslaved people, obviously, enslaved men had a better ability to move around, which, I mean, that probably sounds weird to say, but that's just how things play out. Like, within oppressed groups, there are hierarchies. And within that hierarchy, men didn't experience the same amount of sexual violence as enslaved women did, right? And so that is why capitalism is inherently against women, because it exploits you at every corner. Like, if there's something about you that the capitalist society says, like, we can, like, exploit that more, they're going to do it.
Like making you have a child.
Multiple children.
That will be born into bondage.
Even if the child's father is not somebody who's, you know, is able to experience bondage at all within the set society.
That's why we come in so many colors.
And also, Africa is the place that has the most genetic diversity out of any continent in the world. So
most of the genetic pool of the human genome still lives in Africa.
So that's also why we come in so many shades, hair textures, and awesome glows. But
so take that, Thomas Jefferson.
Oh God! Oh my God! Thomas Jefferson also came up in that conversation with that guy, because he was like talked about.
I love that we're talking about working class feminism, and it comes back to I went on a date with this guy. Go on, I just.
But
love
it's
that.
Just like my. I think it's just so important to realize that like this happens in interpersonal relationships in such a way that is like so insidious at times that people are just like, oh, well, you know, he's just being a man, or they're just being like how they are. No, the person's actually being oppressive. They're being a piece of they're like stepping on your neck while telling you that they're interested in loving you or whatever the case is. That doesn't make sense. But Thomas Jefferson came up and he's like, well, the founding fathers had some good ideas. You can't just throw out the baby with the bathwater. I was like, I'm throwing away the baby, the bathwater, the tub, the house that the tub is in. And then I'm giving the land back to the people who it actually belongs to, because none of this makes any sense.
Another mic drop moment.
Like,
wow.
Yeah, they had good ideas, air quotes, scare quotes,
what
whatever.
Were those ideas founded in?
The exclusion of me and women and people who look like me and anybody else who didn't fit into their weird Christian white idea of being wealthy and great. Thomas Jefferson was f***ing underage girls. Mm-hmm. I don't get how I can't throw away the baby and the bathwater and the house and the tub. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of other people that had great ideas who weren't terrible human beings, and I'm just going to try to find those people instead. Because mm-hmm. Quite frankly, there's people who said justice and liberty for all without saying those exact words, because maybe they came from an oral culture, so they didn't write those things down, but those concepts were already in play. So that's the thing. Capitalism is just this, you know how the Cookie Monster will like just eat everything? Right? And but stuff is still falling all over the place. So he actually didn't really eat the cookie. I feel like that's kind of what capitalism is like. It's like trying to consume all this stuff, but it's like making a f-ing mess. But people are like, oh, it's okay. I got most of it. And it's like, no, it's not okay. It's leaving a lot of stuff out. It's excluding people. And it's also making a bloody mess. Mm-hmm. Why do you want that to keep happening?
Mm-hmm. Great question.
Yeah. I mean, it's rhetorical, obviously.
Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street? Sesame Street was radical in its time.
It was.
A lot of people don't think about this, but the point of having puppets that were different colors with human beings was on purpose.
Yeah.
It was to show, like, what it could be like. Like, the world can be like Sesame Street. So right-wingers hate Sesame Street for that reason.
I mean, they love that's on HBO now, so, you know, nobody can... You have to have, like, extreme access to...
It's not on PBS?
No, it's not on PBS. It's not. I've been on PBS for a while.
Breaking news. Big Bird is dead. Oh, no. Yeah. Isn't that what Mitt Romney said?
Who cares?
Okay.
Whatever he said was silly. Throw him away and the bathwater.
I was going to say, Mitt Romney is being rehabilitated, like George Bush.
By who?
Like Ronald Reagan. By people who are against Trump.
Oh!
And sort of long for the days of, like...
Conservatives that are more, like, easily understood or not as likely to throw a tantrum in public. I don't know what the correct wording would be for that, but I
conservatives that are not rude.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
People hate Trump because he's rude.
Yeah, they don't hate him because, like, they dislike his policies or what he's doing. They're just like, well, if you could have just talked to us a little bit nicer, which is like,
it's bizarre.
This whole country is just a bizarre, weird mess.
So the United States of America is a bizarre, weird mess. Okay? That's what we've established at around the halftime point of the show. So, now what?
The most vulnerable people within the society coming together to say, like, this is enough, and we're going to figure out how we're going to rebuild this thing that wasn't built with us in mind, that was actually built on our backs. How are we going to rebuild this thing? Women... of all types, trans, queer, non-binary, and their, not allies, but their accomplices.
Their friends, family,
their friends, family, community members are ready to kind of grapple with the entirety of the reality that has created the United States. And I think that's not something that's happening a whole lot, at least not here in the U.S., as you mentioned before. The world over has a lot more celebrations around workers' rights and women's rights as a in general.
Yeah, they didn't experience the McCarthy era, which sort of tried to conflate anti-racism and anti-sexism with communism, which was never correct.
Which was never correct, yeah. Oh, my God.
Other countries didn't experience that.
That's great. That's such a good way to put that, because I have been kind of searching for the words to understand why people hear communism and they're like, oh, you know, they expect like some like weird red monster to be like behind them. Mm-hmm. And then you ask them about like,
it's
well,
Elmo, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's actually Elmo. What do they think, like, social, like, what do they think is going to happen that's going to be so bad in the socialist society? And then the thing I hear a lot is, I won't have nice things. Girl, you don't have nice things now because you can't afford them. So.
But they think they might. They just work hard.
They would, but.
The best revenge is your paper.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. It is just like, but you, like, again, you don't have all the nice things you want now. And even if you were to have these nice things, these brands like Gucci and Prada are always constantly doing racist things. So I'm sorry. I think you probably would end up doing some kind of boycott or full-cot anyway.
Yeah, Black Twitter has a full Gucci boycott. The first thing I thought was how many Black people, like ordinary Black people,
can even afford Gucci?
It's wild.
So it's just, oh my God, it's just weird, right? We just get these like little concessions here and there. In American, like in the United States, in our society, we get those little concessions, and I don't know why, but it seems that we are okay with them, and just kind of not we as a whole, but
overwhelmingly
are okay with them and are kind of appeased by them, or they're a little bit cute for now, so we'll just go along to get along, and I don't know what that is about. I also always say, like, this is a country where we have access to so much information, you know, by being able to go to a public library or do a Google search or just have that kind of access to knowledge. And people here, sometimes I'm so surprised by the fact that they still only are getting their news from CNN and Fox, which...
Yeah, they're corporate entities.
They're corporate entities, yeah.
They have interests.
They have interests. And they are not going to give you, like, the full scope of what is going on. So I don't know how that happened or why that has happened here exactly, but I do think that people in the U.S. do face an interesting kind of monster in capitalism, in that it's
manufactured consent. Like
yeah,
said.
Yeah.
So it's
so smart.
Yeah, I mean, another mic drop moment. Noam Chomsky is so smart.
Yeah, I remember, like, just I read a lot of his stuff in school, and I was like, wow, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So if there's a general consensus that a thing that may feel counter, if everyone else agrees, you may just go ahead and agree as not to rock the boat.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're also so smart. I mean, that makes sense.
You see someone who doesn't have a home. They're homeless. You know that's not okay. But if you hear immediately from, God forbid, but all too often, your parents, the people who you trust the most, and they say something like they're lazy, and then you hear that from a kid who also heard that from their parents, and you grow up and you watch the news and they say something similar, well, then you might end up with a bunch of people whose knee-jerk reaction was, this is not okay, asserting that it is. It's manufacturing consent, in my opinion.
Well, it's your show, so your opinion is the one that matters. And I do agree with it.
Thank you.
I think it gets hard a lot of times, you know, if you're constantly challenging things to feel the energy to keep going. But when you're in those spaces and you see that there's other people who care about the liberation, not like actual liberation, not just like, you know, somebody else getting rich. Another tier in being able to oppress other people. They actually care about, like, the liberation, everybody losing their chains. I think that's a really powerful feeling that has made me feel hopeful. And I think that's really quite important to feel that kind of hope. When we hear those different voices, we're better able to understand our position and why we're taking that position and why we're pushing hard against capitalism and its, you know, cronies. Those things are important. They're powerful and they're needed. So,
teacher strikes, like the one happening in Oakland right now, where Black women are shining.
The one that happened in LA. There's been a lot.
West Virginia.
Yeah.
Arizona, just 2018 experienced or had more strikes in it than at any point in decades, where class struggle has been depressed and we want to contribute to sort of feminist consciousness in a way that points to women who are struggling here and abroad for a more just society. Women in Puerto Rico, where my family is from, talking about the resistance against PROMESA, which is a bill in Congress, or not a bill, not a law in Congress, that puts five people on top of what's called a fiscal control board over the entire economy of Puerto Rico, which means a depression of wages and workers' rights, public accommodations, public spaces, selling the island wholesale. And if you ask me, I say that it is to try to encourage more and more Puerto Ricans who technically have U.S. citizenship to just leave the island so that Puerto Rico can look a lot more like St. Barth's, which is an island that is almost totally populated by wealthy tourists as they're being serviced by poor African people.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I was just at this art reception event yesterday.
Hi, Sophia. Sophia Maurice is the curator at Florida State University. I love you, Sophia.
Yep, she's very lovely. And she put together this exhibit that includes Black people, and a few of them being Black women like myself. Another lovely artist, Habiba Abdul Rahim. She's great. And just seeing the work that's just like clearly representing Blackness in such like a white space as Portland State is. It's a predominantly white institution, a PWI, that has a pretty bad history of treating students of color poorly, and arming their campus police as soon as they had the most racially diverse freshman class. They went ahead and did that. So that is like a tool of resistance, right? To see such beautiful, vibrant art that is mostly depicting, a lot of it depicting Black women with their natural hair out, Black women who are wearing head wraps, Black women who are sitting, just like doing anything.
Living their lives.
Yeah.
Uninhibited.
Living their lives. Yeah. Uninhibited, yeah. Freely.
Toni Morrison says, outside of the white gaze.
Oh, perfect.
G-A-Z-E, not G-A-Y-S. That's another show.
Ooh. Okay. I like that one. That's just, it's really powerful. And throughout the course of being there for about, you know, an hour and 30 minutes, different women came up to myself and Habiba, and were like asking, like, what's the inspiration behind what you make? Like, it's really powerful for me to see this. And a lot of these were like young, I mean, not that I'm old or that Habiba is like, we're not necessarily in college. Portland State in the same way. And a lot of them were Muslimas, and Muslim women. Yeah. And the way in which they experience exclusion at Portland State and throughout society is heightened, obviously, due to like the rampant Islamophobia and the violence that comes with that. And then on top of that, the violence that comes with being a woman, and the top of that, the violence that comes with, along with being a Black woman.
It's really coming out right now, the vitriol against Ilhan Omar.
Yeah.
And Rashida Tlaib. It's wild because it's like on Twitter, it's like at an all-time high. We've always known it's there, but the vitriol is blowing me away every day.
Yeah, I'm not on Twitter. It seems like a very mean place. It does. So I don't go on there for my own kind of mental stability, which sometimes is just so fleeting that I have to hold on to it any way I can get it. But just to have them say like, wow, this is like beautiful. I see myself in this. I see people I know in this. And it makes me feel some level of home in like a place that is like set on making me feel like I don't belong. So I think that's where art plays a part, is that it conjures these emotions and these feelings of acceptance and strength and just the ability to like keep going when you know, so much of society tells you to stop
and lay down
and just like, you know, take this stuff and just be okay with it. And also a lot of the expressions on the faces of the people that were painted, the women that are painted, they aren't necessarily like sitting there and just like smiling or whatever not that smiling is wrong, but just seeing those like kind of like strong, looking forward, like uninhibited, as you know, we mentioned before, is just, I can't really explain how important art is to me. Well, in words, that's obviously why I make it. So it gives some level of beauty and some level of, there's just more to life, more to things than the pain that I'm going through right now. And I think that's really important, especially for people who are marginalized, to see that.
You need an outlet for your pain.
Yeah, you need an outlet for your pain. And I'm really excited. I felt really happy to be there. I didn't really want to go because I don't really like leaving my house very often, to be honest.
It's a lovely house.
So I just stay in there. But it was very empowering, and it gave me a lot of new ideas for a new art series that I want to do. I really don't paint men at all because I'm not interested. If you're cute, you can give me your number, but I don't want to paint you. But I want to paint more people who are non-binary and who are pushing against the forced gender expectations. Mm. So I have these little kind of frames that I got that are 5x7. And I've been very into eyes lately. And so a lot of my art is with colored pencils. And you can really layer and kind of blend colored pencils in a way that makes eye makeup stuff look kind of interesting, I think. So I want to do a series of different people's eyes. But the folks who are wearing the makeup are what we would consider masculine presenting. And I've just been seeing a lot of those powerful images. So anyway.
Yeah. The line, the role of art is to make revolution irresistible. Comes to mind.
I like that.
We can build a true intersectional feminist working class fighting movement. Thank you all very much. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, with my good friend Lamara Haynes, artist, activist extraordinaire. Do you have any words to take us out?
None of us are free until we're all free. Always remember that and always continue to struggle for the most marginalized, not just yourself.
Thank you very, very much. I'll see you all next week.
We will not bow down to racism. We will not bow down to injustice. We will not bow down to exploitation. I'm gonna stay.
Take a walk with me, cross a walk with me, see what only I can see.
Sisters, check this, watch this.
Turn us loose, set us free from all the chains that bind me. Let us run in our own direction. Let us go, set us free from all this propaganda and lies.
Let your people try to teach us. I know why you would like to bring us down.
Because we have all the dirt on you. You try to tell us that our lives don't mean a damn.
But we know so much better, so we're gonna take a burrito.
System embrace you, yeah, you and praise the mother God.
All these lies and all this propaganda that you want us to sing.
Listen, if I'm boom boom rule, I be the ruler like Slick Rick. Hit with this quick witted Adidas wearing chick. Papa got a brand new bag. Mama got a brand new Jag. Go tag. I ain't no old hag. I represent not only in the kitchen, in the bedroom, but also in the boardroom. So give me more room. Deny my opportunity. You in jeopardy. Yo, yo, set me free. Don't hinder me. Let me be.
I'm fighting for freedom. I got the heat in case you need them. Straight soldier. Ain't nobody told ya. Hold up on them lies. I know your games and your plans. Do whatever you can to oppress the man. But when it's time to drop the bar, bring the funk in the song. You say you never met a sister so strong, you're wrong now. How can we be free? It takes you and it takes me to blend together in harmony and peace and love and all of the above. Sisters coming together representing one love. No disrespect, but we gotta get it together. No matter what's the weather, sisters gotta stick together. And sisters be strong, don't let them steer you wrong. Hold on, cause sisters got it going on. Bring your mind and your soul. Don't make no guys come take control. Cause you're young and a little lady wrong. And I'm the story as never
before. Whoever said told. These are the things that you can do and the things you ain't supposed to. So where my brother when I think I'm getting closer? That's when I tend to think of Rosa. I once had took a seat to make a stand, but now I'm standing. We've gotten more demands and they never thought in planning that a wish for us to sit would be a dose. Just roller coaster. Whether tradition or religion, why you question my decision? Why you spend up all your time trying to get into my mind? Why everybody and they mama got to add to all my drama? Mad drama. Hell, if I'ma keep my dominating feministic hell creating crazy sexy cool black in the palms of your player hater stands. My only chance of being free is to fly within me, and it's illegal to kill a meagle. A bird is never more important than my people. I guess we didn't need him, so I took away his freedom.
Cause free your mind and your soul. Don't make no guys come take control. Cause you're young and you play the role. And I'm that story has never been told.
My spiritual awareness leads me to believe that your doubt in the sisters could come with the peace. We've been together since Jack created border. The African border celebration is in order. Pop the cork and give champagne to the stork that brought the light to my mama in New York. African, I come again and again. You kick me down, I get back up, I'm coming back in multiples of 10.
You know where I come from. Sprung from the belly of the beast, used to speak African tongue. So I showed her, next one bolder. Sprung the devil over my shoulder. I'm getting over, cause I'm bolder than the next. I'm in nothing, cause I speak the real truth from the text. Who's next to flex with this S-I-S-T-E-R? The sun, the moon, the crescent, the star. Wanna see how open you are.
Bring your mind on your soul. I make no dice from take control. Because you're young and I look like a role. The right time on you, I'm gonna make them know.
Come and take a walk with me. Closer walk with thee. See what only I can see. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. So it's back to the womb of everlasting life and truth. Let the heaven of a system embrace you. And praise the mother God. Coming to the light, let it shine. Blackness is fine.
Damn, and that's who I be. And I don't give a damn if your eyes can't see. If you can't see what I can see, that you're wrong, baby. I'm a woman who's black, so back up, cause it's on. I'ma tell you strong what's wrong with the world that we're living on. It ain't who you know, it ain't what you drive. It's about how you feel about yourself on the inside. Self-esteem is low, and they call you a hoe, then you think you's a hoe, but that ain't what the Lord God made you to be. I need you to see, you're black and you're free.
Bring your mind and your soul, I make no guys come take control, because you're young and I don't play the role.
You're listening to KBOO in Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio dial. My name's Lenita Duke, and coming up is From the Grassroots.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the live performance of the West Lynn Radio Hour, KWL 1956. On Saturday, March 16th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Youth Music Project in West Lynn. For the past 3 years, the West Lynn Historical Society has produced the KWL radio show. This year, the reenactment will feature a roundup of the news, West Lynn history on parade, as the Willamette Flow soap opera, and more. Again, that's a live performance of the West Lynn Radio Hour, KWL 1956, on Saturday, March 16th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Youth Music Project, 2015 8th Avenue in West Lynn. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Forest Defense Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project annual benefit on Saturday, March 16th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Cider Riot in